episode of A Week Late is brought to you by FenEntertainment.com, offering the very best in free independent music from the great sunny state of Florida and beyond. Download underground hip-hop, rock, industrial, drum and bass, dubstep, ska, drumstep, jungle, and much, much more. From single tracks to full sets, albums, and remixes, all for free. Plus the latest videos that get you up to speed on all the current tech, art, music, video games, TV, movies, pop culture, and even anime. No ads, no pop-ups, no flashy distraction banners, and it's absolutely free. Never charge for anything. For all this and more information, go to www.fenentertainment.com.
So, welcome everybody to a Week Late podcast. My name is Darren, aka Analysis489 on Twitter, and this is episode 41. And with me today is yet another guest. He's been on the show before. And we're watching Taken 2 today, and he's an avid fan of the first Taken, as I am. My brother David is back again.
Hello, everyone.
This time it was kind of planned out, I guess. For those first-time listeners that don't know, this is a show, a podcast in which we review movies that are kind of old, not really old, but the premise behind it is that we're too broke or lazy to go watch these, or busy, keeping it positive, to watch these movies when they first come out, and there's a huge flux of review shows out there that get access to movies before they even are released, therefore spoiling said movie. So this kind of gives everybody sort of a buffer to watch. We still catch them inside theaters, but they've been out for a week or two. Getting back on track this week is Liam Neeson. He should be Sir Liam Neeson by now. He's a badass.
He is.
You know what you were thinking of earlier? The Gray.
Yeah.
That was last year, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Prior to recording, we were talking about, we were doing minor research. This movie has Liam Neeson from such films as the Star Wars prequels, The Gray,
Dark Knight. Battleship,
which we've reviewed so far, I think, all those. Maggie Grace plays his daughter in this movie. She is from a movie that I saw earlier this year called... God, I always forget the name of it, because it reminds me of Prison Break in space. What was that movie with Guy Pearce? And Maggie Grace played the president's daughter that was doing, like, these space missions.
Yeah.
I don't know. I totally forgot what the name of that movie was. Let me scroll back here a little bit. I apologize for the lack of... This is how the show rolls. I do no research, and I just start talking. Per our Facebook comment, we had a complaint. We're trying to do more... research, but failing miserably at doing so. Because, I don't know, it's kind of just not the style, but
I've got a bunch of her movies here. I don't see which one you're referring to.
It was real. It was recent. Yeah, it was just this year.
2012, Taken 2, Hot Girl.
Lockout was the name of it. Starring Guy Pearce. It was released, I believe, April of this year. She plays his daughter. She was in the first movie. Pretty much the same cast returns from the first movie. for those of you that don't know, I guess we can spoil the first Taken, because, I mean, unless we're actually, I'm not going to do a show on that. Long story short, Liam Neeson plays a badass, and somebody kidnaps his daughter, and not to ruin it completely,
kidnaps her for
human trafficking.
Yeah, example would be like sex trade, human trafficking.
Right, kidnaps his daughter, ends up uncovering a plot for a human traffic trade that someone he knows may or may not be involved with. He hunts them down, and pretty much everybody dies, except for him and his family. Taken 2, which I didn't think there would be a sequel to, to be honest with you.
I'm surprised that they would.
Which kind of brings me into my expectations, but I want to get this out of the way. Also starring in this movie, who we'll see a lot more in this movie than we did in the first one, is Liam Neeson's ex-wife, slash Maggie Grace's mother in this movie. I believe her name is pronounced Famke Janssen. She is from such films as, oh, she played Jean Grey?
No. X-Men?
Did she? She wasn't Jean Grey.
She looks like that lady. I think she is.
She did play Jean Grey in the X-Men movies. She was also in a movie a long time ago. It was supposed to be a horror flick, and it really wasn't all that scary at all. She's also been in, like, shows like Nip Tuck.
Yeah, Ally McBeal.
Ally McBeal. If I can remember the name of this show she was in. Or was it movie, rather? Oh, Rounders. She played, she was hot in Rounders. Love that movie. Alongside Matt Damon. Not too many other people, I guess, that we would gather would be recognizable. The director, is this the same guy that did the first one?
Checking that out right now.
The director is... Was it Olivier? It looks like Megaton. Megaton. Olivier, I guess that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah. Megaton?
Megaton, I guess, is his name. Director of Colombiana.
Oh, nice.
Director of Transporter 3. Yeah. Which you're a big fan of the Transporter movies.
I like them.
Doesn't look like he directed the first one.
I don't think so.
Which is interesting. Oh, I just saw... Oh, never mind. So speaking of that, the first movie's expectations, I didn't really have any going into it. I didn't know what to expect. But this movie, I didn't think there would be a sequel to because... How are you going to make this different? You know what I mean? What's going to be... It sort of seemed like a joke when I saw the trailer. It's like, I think in the trailer, there's a scene where he's talking to his daughter. He's like, hey, they're going to take you again. And I thought it was a joke. Like, really? Are they really doing this? But that's an actual line, I think, in the trailer. So it's not really spoiling anything. But I think... This movie is going to have to do a whole lot to convince me that it's going to be different or better than the first. Not just with explosions or guns, but like plot-wise. Like, how are they going to make this different? What's going to be... At this point, I think it's just the mob getting revenge versus a trying to uncover a story for a human traffic ring in the first one. Like, you see what I'm saying?
What I took away from... the trailer I saw on TV, what I took away from it was, and I hope I'm wrong because it sounds stupid, let's take a vacation to where all the bad guys are. And that's what I got from it. It seems like they're on a family outing to some remote eastern black country where all these Russian, you know, gangsters are that took her in the first. Now, why would you do that?
Well, I think that they're on vacation and these monsters have been following and tracking them and waiting for the perfect time to strike.
In the synopsis of Taken 2, it says, the family found in Istanbul. Okay, what are you doing in Istanbul?
In Istanbul, retired CIA operative Brian Mills and his wife were taken hostage by the father of a kidnapper Mills killed while rescuing his daughter.
They were already in Europe.
It's a revenge plot, is what's going on, versus his girl just getting taken for no reason.
Yeah.
This one, they've been... But yeah, why are you vacationing in Istanbul?
Why would you go to where they live? And so, so that's where they have to pull off the storyline.
That's what I'm trying to say.
I need to know more.
And I always complain about how they give away too much in the trailers. I don't know that they do that in this because I'm hoping that there's so much more storyline that the trailer isn't like, really? They're getting taken again and having the same conversations that they did the first time on the phone. I've always liked the relationship aspect, that a family could be so close that they would do this for each other. Because if you got kidnapped, you'd be fucking dead. I can't do that for you. You know what I'm saying? And there's no way I would be able to go Jason Bourne on those motherfuckers.
Unless you were an ex-CIA.
Right. But I'm saying, if that happened to me in real life, I'd be like, I love you, bro. I'm sorry. I can't do shit. You know, you're screwed.
Yeah.
You're dead. I'm sorry. If that happens, you will die because I'm not Liam Neeson as a badass. I'm not ex-CIA, you know. But I sort of like that the father-daughter relationship that got stronger because she knows better now. You should listen to your dad. You dumb biatch, otherwise.
Don't let your mom pamper you into thinking that everything's fine.
So also interested to see how the relationship between husband and ex-wife, if they're back together now, has this whole thing. You know, so it's a little bit soapy, I guess. They have to kind of take it there. But I like the transition or the relationship between everybody and how it changes. Which brings me to... expectations are middle of the road versus the first one, which I think if I did have expectations, they would be high expectations. I do have high expectations on this one, but I'm saying middle because I really need for them to let me figure out, okay, those reasons exactly. Why are you in Istanbul? And how the differences between plots and story, and if there's a second one, there's going to be a third one, clearly. And I don't know if this is like one of those things where we don't need that many of them. Are they trying to take it to like a Bourne?
It's not that clear to me. I'm actually hoping they end it with this one. Because, I mean, you could stretch it on and on because, you know, there's no amount of gangs. You can't kill every gang.
It'll be 15 years later and the girl has a kid who's now 15.
Yeah, I mean...
And he's like part vampire. It'll be taken three...
Liam Neeson's like a grandpa now, you know?
Yeah, he's chasing people around in his...
I think...
What are those called?
It's a stretch. Around. For me, like you, it's a stretch. They have to really prove to me that they deserve to even come out with a second one.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think leaving the first one well enough alone...
It would have been fine.
I would have never imagined them coming out with a sequel to this movie.
That's why I thought it was a joke when I saw the trailer.
I was like, no way. This is not... No, this is some like... Saturday Night Live spoof,
right,
whatever.
Right, that's what I thought.
And I'm like, no, this is an actual movie. I'm like, oh my God, well...
Funny you mentioned, because I do want to mention Saturday Night Live in the second portion.
You know, so far, out of all the movies Liam's done, you know, some of the bottom of the barrel ones would quite honestly be the...
I watched Battleship, and it wasn't that bad.
No,
he wasn't in as much as he should have been.
I'm telling you, it's the Star Wars for me.
Bottom of the barrel?
Yeah, because those movies weren't that great. Let's just be honest.
Yeah, I didn't like the prequels.
They weren't that great. And for him to be, I mean...
Storyline-wise, dramatic effect, yes.
Absolutely.
Backstory, hell yeah. But was it the original Star Wars?
No.
Not at all.
I mean, it was a way to fill in the gap, sure. There was a lot of hype on them.
Storyline, special effects.
I mean, come on. I don't know. I'm not a...
But... He was a badass in Star Wars, though.
That's when
I started paying attention to him.
That's the one thing I'm getting at, is those movies were lacking, not so much in substance, you know, because it was rich, you know, in my opinion, with substance. If you really wanted to know the details and the backstories of all these...
And kind of racist, I might add.
In a little bit was, yeah. But what I'm getting at is he is super talented.
Mm-hmm.
And for him to be in those movies, it was like to raise the bar.
Do you think he knows that he's getting older and he has to be like the senior citizens James Bond? Like,
well,
I have to do as many of these as possible before I die.
That because I think he's kind of replaced Sean Connery as the the badass old dude, because now Sean Connery's too old
with
to
the British accent too, right?
Right. So he's kind of too old to do that, so I think he's kind of filling in that gap of the 50-something,
wow,
you know, superstar that can still kick ass and take names, you know?
Yeah, I never even saw him. I see him in a whole new light now. He's like this generation's Sean Connery.
Yeah, to me, that's what... Well, you just brought that up. He kind of just instantly...
No, I just said the 007s, you know, and then you mixed that in, I guess, with that.
It's a generational thing. I think Sean Connery's just too old to do that stuff, so he's kind of pulling in that...
Which is great, because right now we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of James Bond, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I saw a commercial.
So I got to talk about Saturday Night Live, because Daniel Craig was on there, and they did some 007 spoofs. It was hilarious. Well, I guess they just talked about it, so there you go. So, middle of the road for you then?
Well,
on the same. I have high expectations. I know it's going to be action packed.
Yeah.
I'm
afraid
it's
going to be middle of the road. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think
I'm
maybe
afraid
that's.
It is.
I think that's maybe my.
I have high expectations
too,
for it, because I love this guy. He's talented. He's wonderful.
I'm shooting low so it doesn't disappoint me.
Pretty much.
I'm saying, God, I hate that.
I don't like to do that, and I hope that I just come out going, you know, yes. That was awesome, and it was worth coming out with a second one.
Well,
I would totally be disappointed if I walk out there going, man, they should have just left the first one.
Yeah,
and
that's what's going to suck. That's what I walked out of Transformers 2 feeling like. I should not have watched this movie. It was garbage, and the first one was great by itself. Yeah, so I guess that's it. Everybody else... if you haven't yet seen Taken, we spoiled the shit out of it. Actually, we didn't.
Not really.
It was the general plot. There's a ton of action. There's all that relationship stuff that I mentioned. Go check it out. We're going to put on some intermission music. Go watch Taken 2 right now, and then come back for the second portion. We'll give you the ratings. We'll count down to the spoilers, and then we'll talk about some more TV shows and some upcoming video games and some trailers that I'm excited about. So we'll see you for the second portion of episode 41 for Liam Neeson, Famke Janssen, and Maggie Grace in Taken 2. By the way, movie is PG-13.
What?
And
I did not know that.
Runs only an hour and a half.
Hmm.
So...
we'll see.
We'll see. We shall see. What was the first one?
I'm pretty sure the first one was rated R.
There was a lot of violence.
It was heavy violence.
Huh.
And I'm pretty sure the language was pretty thick.
Interesting. So there's that.
Well, maybe they're just going for a wider audience or something.
Wider as in colors?
No, wider, like in wider.
Oh, a broader.
Not
like, were you talking about Star Wars being racist? It's a little,
no, like,
a little racist right there. All right, there we go. Did we find out what the first one? Oh, here's first one was in 2008, and this one says unrated, but it was also PG-13 and an hour and a half.
Interesting.
Very
it's
interesting.
That.
Very interesting.
You know what? That makes a lot of sense that it was PG-13 because Mom sat through the whole thing.
Hmm. And she's not one
normally,
of these kind of movies.
Right. Normally the violence would be too much or the language would
interesting.
Be too much.
But I remember it being very violent.
Very
like,
violent.
It was, there was drug use involved at the end when they found
the sexual innuendo because the girls were used for the sex trade.
Yeah. That's crazy how it was PG-13.
That's awesome that they can
wow.
have so much.
I don't know how awesome that is. It means that we're getting very loose as to what a PG-13 movie is entailing.
That's just, in general, the whole industry.
Wow. All right, there you have it.
I just want to make this political.
We'll be back for part two. Thanks for listening. to part two of episode 41 for Taken 2 with Liam Neeson and Famke Janssen and Maggie Grace. Also from Lost. I forgot to mention she's from Lost, too.
Yeah, that's right. She was.
Yeah. And a bunch of Russian people. Right? Russians?
Serbians? Yeah, same thing. Whatever. All Eastern Bloc countries.
So I guess, I don't know. Was it... I don't know if I... Because, okay. The one thing I can say without spoiling it right away is that it pretty much picks up right where it left off. It doesn't say how many years later this is, or if it is years later. That's the only thing I didn't pick up on it. All I know is that they had enough time to gather all the dead bodies from the previous one.
Sure, that's right.
And
bury them.
And have give them a proper burial.
Sorry.
At which point, the father of the slain mafia guys, in front of everybody, pretty much swears vengeance on Liam Neeson's character, Brian, whatever his name is. So we both had high expectations, I guess, is the official answer, but we're... scared of it being disappointing.
Right.
What did you think?
I wouldn't call it a complete disappointment.
Yeah.
There are several reasons for that, but I guess I can't get into that till after we do the spoilers.
Right.
But there were some good things about it. And I liked some of it because it made you fill in the gaps of time with your own imagination, and we can get into that too.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't necessary. It was almost, you could have just, there was no need to spend the film stock to do those scenes, and we'll get to that, because it was like,
I kind of know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm saying? But, you know.
There were a lot of things that, and I wouldn't say it's a complete disappointment, which means it kind of is a disappointment. Whenever you say that about something,
here's my bottom line.
It's kind of a disappointment.
There was a lot in the first film that I would say was completely feasible. Even if it's on the borderline of a yeah, right, that
mm-hmm.
thing. But in this one, I'd have to say there are at least two.
See, I'm glad you said it, because yeah, right moments, there were a lot of them.
In this one, there were two for me. I mean, the skill set that...
Yeah, and we can get into that.
Yeah, that the CIA might bring into the picture is interesting. Now, it wasn't his skills that were my yeah, right moments.
Right.
So we
and
can
I
get into
there,
that
yeah.
later.
I was going to say, in the first part, is like what makes a really good movie to me is... A car scene, like a good car chase, is always, I'm always down for one of those.
Sure.
And there was definitely, and I think that's the same moment that you're talking about. There's a car scene, and it was awesome, but it had nothing to do with Liam Neeson's character. Due to that fact, I'm going to go ahead and give this movie a rating so we can talk about that. For the new listeners... Welcome back. I think I already did that part. But we have the sort of thing where we do the ratings first, and then we'll do like a spoiler countdown, at which point you can stop listening, go back and watch the movie, or if you don't care about spoilers, just obviously continue to listen. Okay. So that being said, I think one of my fears came true in that there was a really good car scene, car chase. Our question about why Istanbul was answered,
right,
which I gave it a better score for because I said I would, and they did, so I did. But I kind of am disappointed. It was pretty much the same story, minus the mystery behind the whole drug cartel or human traffic cartel. There wasn't any conspiracy in this one. It was, like I said, it's just, we know why this is a revenge killing, and this is what we're doing. So I'm kind of disappointed because they didn't want to give this movie, and I got what I wanted with the car chase, but then the same point that it gained with the car chase, it lost for the same reasons you're talking about. So it kind of leveled out. I think I'm going to give this movie like a 7. The acting seemed kind of rehearsed. It was like they wanted to get through it as fast as they could. Like they didn't want to be there, you know what I mean? But, you know, Liam Neeson always does good acting, and they kind of gave him this sort of superhero quality that I didn't really buy. Like, we know he's an awesome guy, but again, starting to get into spoilers a little bit. Clearly, they all get taken. It's the name of the movie. But during a scene where he's being kidnapped, he's counting the seconds, and there's boats, and like a guy playing some sort of Istanbulian violin, and he's like taking in all these sounds, and he's imagining, like, he's counting down the seconds in between, you know, turn left and turn right, right turn here, and this and that. And later on, he recalls that, like, he's some sort of robot. Like, I don't know anybody. I mean, he tells his wife, look, you know, we're being followed. You're going to go down. And I try to remember it. I try to put myself in her shoes. Like, okay, you have this guy. He's telling me directions of a strange town I've never been in. And I'm going to go. As soon as you stop the car, you're telling me to go down two streets, make a right, make the next left, and then there's going to be a fork in the road, and then you're going to see a red corridor. You're going to go. I wouldn't remember all that shit. Like I said, if I was thrown into any particular one of these situations, you know, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know how people. There was just too much for me. Too many yeah right moments that just didn't. Like, the first one was more grounded, I think, and this one, I don't know, it just kind of, there was actually less action in this one than the first one, I thought. So, I mean, I guess a mediocre score would be a 5, but it is, and again, I'm going to stop because I'm going to get into spoilers because I was just about to talk about what happens sort of later in the movie. But what about you? What do you think?
I walked out of the movie thinking, you know, a 7 as well. I mean, actually, I was thinking a little bit lower, but then I had to come back and say, wait, you know, for me, there were only really 2 yeah right moments that killed it for me. I agree with, it would have to be, okay, you're a frantic, dainty, freaking uppity chick from L.A., like his wife. You're probably not going to remember those directions.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll be surprised with the amount of focus that occurs when it's life and death.
Right.
So to me, that's plausible. That's completely plausible. I'm not saying.
Good point.
You know, for me, that's not going to kill it and bring it down 5 points. You know, in the movie, that's what I'm saying. So turning it around, I had to say, okay, there was some negative points, not enough to give me.
I'm glad you brought that up.
4 points down, because I was thinking like a 6.5, but then I brought it up to a 7 because the little bit, and I agree with you also with the action. The little bit of action, I'm glad was not gunplay. There was a lot of hand-to-hand combat that I thought was pretty freaking good.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I love that.
Mm.
Car chases and hand-to-hand, anybody can shoot a gun. I'm sorry. The bad guys always miss. The CIA agent, boom, you know, one shot, one kill.
Right.
That's what you do. So, okay, fine. But the hand-to-hand was awesome. I really enjoyed those scenes. So it bumped up my score back to a 7, and I thought, it has to stay there. As good
right.
as the rest of the qualities, even though there were some negatives, it's a 7, and that's as good as it's going
to
get for me.
Here's, and I'm about to get into spoilers, so I was going to try to find something online that was clever that did sort of a countdown better than my own, because I want to replace it with something.
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, like one of those things at the radio station. Where you
Right. Some stupid noise. But I'm gonna just go ahead and do it. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Anybody that doesn't want to hear spoilers, stop listening. Thanks.
Push play now on your device.
Yeah, or push pause now. okay, so here's why the loss of points for me is one of those things is like, okay, what you said was you'd be surprised to what you, as to what you could do in a life or death situation.
Yeah.
I saw that. I tried to see it from that perspective. It's like, okay, there was so much stress at the beginning of the movie on how bad of a driver this girl is. She tried 3 or 4 times to get her to get her license done. Yet when she tried to, when she was parallel parking in front of her dad, she did a perfect job. Later on in the movie, that yeah, right moment that we're talking about that loses points for me, in order for them to put themselves in a situation, it was Liam Neeson and his daughter in this scene, and she's like, I don't know if I can do this. He goes, well, do you know how to shoot? And she goes, no. And then he goes, well, you have to drive. Now, he was just telling us at the beginning of the movie how terrible of a driver she is, and she's pulling off shit like Jason Bourne in this thing. And I'm just like, well, how did she all of a sudden become a good driver? But at the same time, it gave her the benefit of the doubt. What if the director, the writers are trying to get across what you have inside of you, what you're capable of when shit hits the fan? And I don't know if that was pulled off as good as it was supposed to be, because when it did actually happen, I'm just like, come on.
Well,
this girl doesn't even have a license, is driving in Istanbul like Bond.
Yeah.
That's bullshit.
I mean, she kind of did pull it off, but I saw some of the scenes, like, lacking. It wasn't like she tried to do one of those reverse the car, hit the e-brake, and then, you know, and then move.
It was clumsily done on
purpose. Exactly.
Yeah.
It kind of was.
She hit the fucking
but
garbage can.
It was still
can.
Big enough, yeah, right, to be like, not only that, but it was a stick shift.
Yes.
It was a stick shift, and those were like the Fast and the Furious Jason Bourne moments where they flashed to her.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm like,
they
really?
Made the quick cuts between, like, her doing, like, you know, the classic shot of, like, you know, the three pedals.
Yeah,
and then her downshifting it.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
That, to me, was amazing.
There's no way that she could do all that.
That
she was,
to me was
and she was
right.
trying to parallel park a Prius.
Right.
Give me a break.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was stuff like that. Like, I think the writer and the director wanted to portray, hey, this is what can be done.
Sure.
But it's like, you can't just fucking learn stick out of nowhere and drive like that
no,
can't even parallel park a Toyota, whatever it was.
Hey, again, going back to the dainty, spoiled brat, L.A. lifestyle female type that she is.
The other thing that bothered me is just that. The first thing that happens in this movie is her lying to her husband about where her daughter is. Again?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Didn't we just go through this shit? Quit lying to me, because it's not going to be worth it. Like,
figure it out.
Over your stupid boyfriend, too?
And then the ladies, and then she goes, oh, well, you could find where she was in a city of 72 million people.
Yeah, that's her excuse.
Right.
We can lie to you because you're going to find her anyway.
Yeah.
Really? Why don't you just not lie to me in the first place, you dumb whore?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Again, I wanted to choke her out because in the first movie, she was annoying. I wanted to just, like, no wonder you friggin' divorced her, because that broad is got under my skin and I'm not even married. You know, like, wow. And then again, she was kind of that annoying. So I didn't want that. And it was good because later on, it was like a reconciling sort of their relationship, too. So it was all right.
I don't know, man. Like, they're okay. So another thing that brought a point down for me was the fact that, what was it? They had a scene where she was, okay, can I talk about these fucking grenades? For the love of God. Okay. First of all, there's a portion in this movie where Liam Neeson gives his daughter a key to the room. It's supposed to open this closet, right?
Well, there's two rooms, and for some reason the key didn't open the room to the actual bedroom where the closet was.
Yeah, that's my
number one problem.
That's my first problem.
Yeah.
He gave her the key to a room. He said, go to the room I told you where the book was in. They had discussed the book before. And I thought that book was going to come in handy. Never came up again. She goes to the room. She goes to unlock what I think is where the case is supposed to be and where she's supposed to hide out until the bad guys leave and she can go to the embassy with the case. This is what I'm thinking is supposed to happen. So she goes to the room. She goes to unlock the closet that the case is supposed to be in. Meanwhile, this case is Liam Neeson's case of badassdom because he's got grenades, he's got silencers. This guy, I mean, he should have been in The Expendables. He had so much shit that he would have been up there with Schwarzenegger in the electric car ripping doors off and shit. Okay, so then what happens is that the bad guys start catching up with her, and she moves out to the balcony and scooches over to the next room where she hides in yet another, a completely different closet that she then finds that case in that's supposed to be...
No,
what
that's
was,
not what I thought.
That confused the shit out of me.
Those were two rooms. The main room where she came in, and then his master bedroom... inside the first room. Now, I'm assuming the one key opens both doors for some reason.
But she couldn't go back into the hallway?
No.
She had to go out the ledge like a...
Yeah, she had to go scoot across the window to get into that room that she couldn't get in with the key he gave her.
Right.
I'm like, okay. I don't understand that because...
Okay,
opened the door with the same key. He didn't have two keys.
Right.
He had the same key to open the main
door.
Here's
the problem,
though. The first key then opened the second door.
We're led to believe, or at least just the way I understood it, we're led to believe that door that she's trying to open is the key to the closet door. But it's the key to the connecting
bedroom,
room.
Right, that has the closet.
Gotcha. That's...
Yeah.
Thank you. So not a mistake, but still, this movie gets a 7.
Because that key, why was there a problem with the key?
Well, being from having worked in the hotel industry a lot, and you being a well-traveled guy, your keys never fucking work.
Yeah.
Like, were they near your credit card?
Yeah.
Yes, that's where I always keep it. That's not the problem. So thank you for clearing that up for me. Maybe it wasn't one of the reasons that... And I'm not giving a point back.
No.
I'm not giving the point back. The problem was is that... Maybe I misunderstood. They should have specified that they were joining rooms, and they never did
that. Well, they didn't, but they showed, like I said, in an earlier scene,
right.
Him going through two doors to get to that closet.
Mm-hmm.
My point is that he never had two keys. I mean, I've had master suites before like that. In certain places I stay, I get hooked up, whatever. I get a two-bedroom suite.
Right.
The one key opens all doors in the suite.
Right.
It just works that way. Of course... In being an avid traveler, I know that when you need to get in your room the most, the key doesn't work.
Yep.
And that's what happened in her.
You get your wallet, and you're crushed for time, that 5 minutes, and it's
and whatever, and then all of a sudden
you go back up and it doesn't work,
right,
and then you're late for your shit.
Sure. I've seen that happen
countless times.
Whatever.
All right, so that's cleared up. Now, once she gets, then you have one of these classic scenes where the bad guy finally gets into the room, and lo and behold, there's three doors. And you know what? All she had to do. Okay, so he goes to the pair of doors that are joined because there's three doors. Two of them open together, and one of them
mm-hmm.
opens by itself.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to the one with the two and opens it. And he looks, and there's one dress. There's one fucking dress in the whole closet, and he doesn't move it. He just looks at it and says, "This side's clear." Then it takes him 30 seconds to open the third door. And she knows that he's going to do that, and she cowers. That's all she does. She doesn't move over. She doesn't try to get to the other side to make it this sort of illusion to his mind that you've checked both sides, and it's clear she cowered there, and then lo and behold, wouldn't you know it, at the precise moment he's going to open that third door, something happens in the hallway where somebody gets shot, or there's and his buddy gets shot, and right when he's supposed to open that door and find her, he closes it and rushes out into the hallway. Everything in this movie was like so like last second, like, you know, like, but it was done badly, like, we've seen that before. And then she gets this case, and somehow he's got this iPod Touch that makes calls.
The only thing I could say...
What the fuck was that thing?
Some kind of CIA tool that he gets to use on his own. It was a cell phone like the size of a...
It was one by one. If we're,
you know that cube that you can swipe credit cards in?
Yes.
That's the size of it.
Yes. If you guys know what he's talking about, there's this little device that you can hook up to your iPhone or Android for people that are, you know, they need to sell stuff on the go. They have a card reader that looks like a cube, and that's kind of what this thing looked like, a flattened version of like a cube and an iPod Touch, like, together.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to make one-touch speed dial calls to certain people just by hitting a certain corner of this cube. And he somehow had it attached to his leg and scratched it off. I don't know. That was another thing that got to me. And so without this thing, there's no way this family would have been dead. Without that little thing, because they all found a way to communicate even though they weren't in the same room together, except for his ex-wife and him when they were captive together. And he tells her to take 3 grenades out of this thing. One of them, he says, pull the pin out, walk out to the balcony, count to 3, walk out to the balcony, pull the pin, count to 3, and throw it to somewhere where nobody's around. And I'm like, wait, that can't possibly be right. She pulls the pin out, and I'm like, holy shit, she's going to blow something up. And she throws this grenade, and it explodes under a car on this garage adjacent to this hotel, and it's a huge explosion, so much so that he uses the sound of the explosion to gauge how far away he is from the hotel. And then he tells her on the phone, go keep going east and keep blowing random shit up on the way to come rescue me so I can tell you how close you are. And then when you get here, I just happen to be lucky enough to be captive in a room that has a steam pipe with a chute that goes with a chimney pipe, essentially, that she's on the roof like fucking Assassin's Creed, jumping from rooftop to rooftop, looking for her father and blowing shit up. Like, you are in a foreign country, they would have you in a second blowing shit. Really? You're blowing shit up. You're using grenades. You're exploding the shit out of stuff. And it's like, how many people died? How many people did they kill with those grenades that you don't see? Somebody could have gotten shrapnel in the ass. You don't know that. It was just like these... I was like, is he really using grenades? Like, as a gauge to, like... It got to the point where he would do so much for his family now that he's putting other people in danger.
Well, it is Istanbul, Turkey.
Where shit happens like that all the time, it's okay?
Yeah, you know, people strap themselves to bombs all the time over there and, you know, blow people up in markets and, you know...
Well, I guess if they're using grenades for good, then... Yeah. It was just way over the top. That was my yeah, right moment.
That was one
and then,
I thought I was clever.
And then she drops the gun down the steam pipe and runs, and he gets her again in the nick of time. I mean, I don't know. Clearly, those were the reasons why... there was that relationship stuff in there, but this movie turned into, I don't know what it turned into, but what, and then the other yeah, right moment for me came at the very end, which is the biggest spoiler of them all. This whole time, you're telling me that all we had to do was talk it out? That's all we had to do was talk the whole time? The mob, the father, and Liam Neeson finally get... Oh, and the hand-to-hand combat thing. They set that up like a video game. Like, you're going into one room, and you're fighting, and you're fighting, and fighting, like Mortal Kombat style, and you punch through a wall, and all of a sudden you're in a different arena. They it was set up so much like a scene from Rocky to where he had enough time to take off his shirt and they sort of danced around and like sparred a little bit. But it was great hand to hand. But just the way it was set up, they were literally like standing on this sort of stage in the middle of the sauna fighting. I'm like, who the fuck is this for? Like, why are we... They could have done the same fight on the ground. It didn't have to be elevated. He didn't have to take his shirt off. I don't know. They were paying... I don't know. I guess that's why this movie lost so much, like, luster for me. And then, after that hand-to-hand fight, he finally catches up with the main guy, and really they have, like, a five-minute conversation, not even that, about, you know, hey, let's just stop it right here, just me and you, this is going to keep going, I'm clearly better than anything you've sent after me, if you send your other two remaining sons, I'll kill them too, let's just call it a truce, I'll drop the gun, you walk away, I walk away, and we're done. Doesn't end up happening that way. Huge spoiler is that he pretty much puts his gun down and, like the rat bastard that he is, the Russian guy picks up the weapon and tries to shoot him in the back, possibly the head with it. And then, just like what sums up the entire movie for me, I was expecting this huge epic final battle, and really, all Liam Neeson does is, like, push him in the chest, and the back of his head hits the tile, and he dies. That's it. I'm like, that was what? Like, that was the whole entire, the climax of the movie, the whole, this, it builds up to this, really? And it was just like, I was like, okay, well, that makes sense. It sums up how I felt about the entire movie. This guy pretty much just gets pushed into the wall harder than accidentally and dies. There's nothing. There was no fight. Liam Neeson just pushes him down back in his seat. His head hits something. They don't even show blood coming out of his mouth. We don't know how he died. He shot himself, maybe. I don't know. We don't see any of that. I just thought it was ridiculous. But at the same time, a good period at the end, because I think we're led to believe that it's over, and rightly so. Go rent it, I guess. Redbox it when it comes out. Netflix it. But if you're a hardcore Taken fan, maybe do yourself a favor and don't watch it at all, because I think you'll be disappointed. It didn't have the same holy shit factor as the first one.
Well, I think what happens is the director possibly had difficulty with the building up of what do they call it? Not I just had it in my vocabulary and I lost it. With those intense moments.
Mm-hmm.
where you would try to build up and climb, it wasn't there.
Everything was lacking.
Yeah,
everything was lacking.
Like they were just the typical, like you were describing before, your like elementary type. Suspense.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's gonna open the door and the distraction and he walks
right
out. Oh, this is gonna happen now. Oh, yeah, of course
right
that happened. It was like the same. It was the suspense wasn't there like the first one.
Mm-hmm.
The first one was very suspenseful. He had, and here's the difference too. The first one, Liam was essentially tracking these bad guys,
mm-hmm.
going from one lead to the next, going and killing as he went along.
Right.
This time it was the complete opposite.
Yeah.
They were tracking him.
Yeah.
And so that's where do you build the suspense? Where does the suspense come from? So when they tried to put that suspense in there, it was just a deflated balloon. There was nothing. It wasn't as suspenseful. It wasn't as, you know, dramatic in a sense, because like I said, the tables were turned. They were tracking him more than him tracking them. There was a little bit of that tracking him going back to where they brought him, and then, you know, going up that chain to find the big man and to try to take him down, you know. But
there was a look in the Russian guy's eyes at the end. It was like, yeah, you're a badass and you're better than me.
Yeah. Just do me now. Just kill me.
And I was just like, what the fuck is the point? If this whole thing could have been topped out, the movie could have been over in 20 minutes with a Skype conversation.
You know what? But that's every conflict. Every single conflict can be talked out. It's just the people at the very top don't want to talk. They have all these so-called troops and badasses below them, but when they don't have that around, they're cowering in the corner like the old man was doing. Just kill me.
It's just, I don't know.
You know, but that's true to life, though. That's true to life. The guy's so angry, he can't do it himself.
Yeah.
He has to have all his sons go out there, and then they all die anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so then he's cowering in the corner like, damn, this guy tracked me down. He killed my entire, you know, faction of the Russian mafia or whatever they were from,
right.
Which all happened to be my kids, my grandparents, you know, and my... And he had nothing left.
I think there's somebody out there, like, from some obscure country, who's like, come on, my guy's gonna be better than this. Why did he? No wonder he's winning. Like you said against the Bucks today, he's like, I was like, oh, they look kind of good. He's like, yeah, it's because they're playing a shitty team. There they are. But that's what happens. Like, Liam Neeson may not be that much of a badass. It's just he's up against a bunch of shitty dudes. But it is what it is. I mean, I can't really say I had a lot of fun. I kind of wanted this movie, I don't know, I didn't want it to end, like, in a good way. I wanted it to end so I could be like, wow, you know, I don't know. It's just kind of lackluster. I think you said it perfectly. It's like a deflated balloon. Like, you're looking for that pop, and all it does is go... It just, like, deflates. Traditionally, what we do after the ratings is talk about trailers, which we were there for, which, by the way, 5 trailers these days... They're like 3 or 4 minutes a piece. That's like 20 minutes of freaking trailers now. Do you remember which ones we saw?
Yeah,
if they're even worth? Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
There were 4 this time.
There were a couple worth mentioning.
There was Alex Cross.
What do you think about that?
I think it's funny because... Here's my take on that.
Well, first of all, Alex Cross is Tyler Perry in a super serious role with some other... Actually, here's what I will say about this. I want you to say what you're going to say, and then I'll say it, because I think the more and more I see, I'm usually a person that doesn't like all this information in the trailer, but I don't like Tyler Perry, so as soon as I saw him, I shut off. But the second extended trailer that I saw had more people in this movie I didn't know were in it. And just because of those people, I might go see this movie. Because I do know I'm a little bit biased when it comes to Tyler Perry because I hate the Madea movies. I hate him for doing it. I hate everything it stands for. It's not necessarily racist. I just don't like it when people dress up as women. I don't know why. The only person that pulled that off was Ernest. That's it. But I don't care. Like, he was the original funny dresser-upper guy to me. Because Martin did it for all the Big Mama's House movies, and I don't like it. I don't think it's funny. I don't know why people think it's funny. I think it's the fucking hackiest thing you can do to get a laugh. And he's done, like, eight of those movies, and people keep falling for it. And I think it's fucking retarded. But I will say that the extended trailer did give me a little bit more insight as to what kind of movie this is going to be. And I made a joke. I was like, this movie should be called Tyler Perry Presents Madea's Black Madea's Black Jason Bourne, Madea's Black Bourne Identity, something, you know, Tyler Perry Presents. The names escape me already by now, but there are 2 or 3 other people that I saw. Oh, Matthew Fox, also from Lost, plays the villain in Alex Cross. Which I didn't know, and I'm actually a fan of his because of Lost. But you said it was funny because...
Well, I knew that these people, I knew what kind of movie it was when I saw it, because ironically, the trailer that we saw in the theater, I'd seen it on TV already.
Right.
So I knew, I wanted to go see it. I think I even told you, I was like, did you see that movie? And you're like, I hate him. I'm like, I know, but did you see the movie?
Yeah, yeah.
And
I'm very biased with Tyler Perry. I'll be the first
one.
Well,
I've only, out of the two, out of the, you know, 17,000 Madea movies, I saw two of them, and they were actually pretty good.
That's what people tell me.
But I only saw the two that were worth seeing. Trust me, the rest of them aren't.
I don't think any of them are.
The Diary of a Mad Black Woman, very good
movie. Yeah, but that's not a Madea movie.
No, but it's a Tyler Perry movie.
Yes. I don't like the Madea
yeah,
shit.
Then there was the one Madea movie that I forgot which one I saw, that it was okay. But I think, I don't have this grudge or
I do. I do. I have a deep-seated hate for that character.
I'm not a big fan of, like, you know, dress up in an old lady, you know, Big Mama thing.
Right.
You know, everybody, it's ironic. It seems like only, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong here. I hope I am. But since you, I mean, you're talking 80s, though. Even be, you know,
oh, wow.
with
Ernest. Oh, Jesus.
I mean,
thank you, rest in peace. He's dead, right?
Yeah, he's been.
Thank you, rest in peace.
It seems like only black comedians do that. I don't know of anybody else.
You know, I'm glad that you said
that
because
dress up as old
I was just about to mention, I said before, it's not racist, and here's why. Because I also don't like Eddie Izzard, and he dresses up like a woman all the time, and he's a British comic. He's a white dude that dresses up. He's drag.
I guess there's...
He dresses up and does entire shows as a female character.
There's,
I fucking hate it.
There's just a market for it.
I don't understand why.
There
absolutely has to be. That's why I hate it. Because if it was that easy, guess what? I'm putting on a dress tomorrow. I'm a fucking millionaire. But no. I don't know. I don't get it. It's something that bothers me so much that I'll hate somebody over it, clearly.
Well, what I was saying, going back to that, was as if it wasn't enough that he cornered the market with...
Oh, now he's trying to go after the action shit?
Right. And I'm thinking, okay...
That's exactly
maybe,
why I don't want to go see that movie.
Maybe he could pull it off. And I don't really care. I mean...
It's the platform. It's what it is. It's the platform.
I go, for the most part, for entertainment purposes. You know, I do criticize him sometimes, and even movies that I critique to the point where I don't like them, I still go away with something, you know, whether it was fun because it was just a lot of guns and action, or
there's a message,
or there was a message behind it. You know, some, I always just walk away with, like, all right, just try to justify my $19 that I spent. You know, but and so that's what I thought about this Alex Cross movie. I'm like, okay, he's trying to break out of this Madea thing finally.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm hopefully he can come out and to do something else, and then. You know,
I have seen him in serious roles, and I'm not saying that he's not a good actor.
Right.
He is.
Yeah.
And it takes balls to dress up as a woman, and I'm not saying it's not easy, because you have to understand the process of making a movie. When you commit to dressing up like a woman, you're doing that
probably
12 hours a day.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know what? There is a market for it. I will never condone that activity. And by going to see another movie with him in it, it's still putting money in his pocket to do a 12th Madea movie, and I will not be a part of that, because I don't think those movies belong in our society. We need to put them all in the next Mars rover and leave them up there. They're terrible. The next Big Mama's House, I swear to God, the next time I see Tyler Perry dressed up as a woman and Little Bow Wow in the same movie, I will make a vendetta to go shoot both of those people.
Here's my thing.
If I see Bow Wow as a family movie, I'll shoot myself.
If you like comics, like I know you do, and comedians and all that, everybody does. I don't know anybody who doesn't like
funny. Yeah, who doesn't like stand-up.
But here's the thing. If your purpose in life is to make people laugh, and the only thing that will make them laugh is a 7-foot-tall black dude in a dress, then that's comedy.
Yeah, it's not my comedy, though. And I won't.
But that's my point.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
If that's the only thing that makes somebody laugh...
You have to have a really sad life.
There's a taste for everything.
Wow, I really feel sorry for you.
I mean,
only thing in life makes you laugh is a
that is like
black dude in a dress.
I mean, you know, in this world where you say that, you know, whatever floats your boat. Well, believe it or not, and we've seen it a million times.
That's true.
Yeah, but I'm going to take it to the extreme here. Whatever floats your boat, well, there are people. What floats their boat is to strap on, right, a bomb and go blow up a market. That's what floats their boat.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, taking it to that's the level of a comedian dressing up as a woman and making 19 movies of a black lady. That is the extreme
it
goes. People think it's funny.
Well, there you go.
And there it is.
I hate Madea movies like terrorism on comedy. That's it. They are people. That's it for me.
That's what I'm saying.
They're so desperate for a laugh. And you know, you're right. If a Madea movie has saved your life, good on you.
Right.
You know, good on you. But people that do that are comedy terrorists to me.
I don't have
any respect for them.
Even with comedy, because slapstick is about as dumb as you can get, in my opinion, with comedy.
Physical comedy, you're not a fan of.
No, I don't mind, but that's what I'm saying. I'm still more of a, like, a intellectual comic. Like, that's why I like shows like, you know, The Big Bang Theory and other, you know, shows that are a little bit more, you know, but it still has, like, this goofy slapstick.
I think we're transitioning into a really good point, though, getting away from trailers real quick, is that we spent a good portion of the weekend watching two really good movies about comedy. For those people out there that have Netflix, I talk about it a lot. We're not sponsored by them, but I use a lot of online applications to watch TV and movies that I've been catching up on a lot lately. Netflix has two very similar movies out. One is a stand-up show that's The Comedians of Comedy, live from the Troubadour. It's about 2 hours and 20 minutes, and it's from beginning to end, just a bunch of different comedians that Patton Oswalt is introducing, or has introduced, whoa, excuse me, has introduced into the comedy forefront. Everybody from Sarah Silverman to Doug Benson, Patton Oswalt, like I said, David Cross, I think Rob Hubel was in there, who's the other guy, he's got a beard, there's Zach Galifianakis, the other guy with the beard,
6 foot tall, goofy,
yeah, the goofy guy,
I forgot his name, the guy from Just Shoot Me, that's what he's best known for,
yeah, Just Shoot Me, he was also in, I can't believe I forgot his name. Anyway, Comedians of Comedy has all those people in it. And then there's a documentary of the making of that tour, the behind the scenes. They're both about 2 hours long. They're really good watches. If you like that kind of alt comedy, which apparently is a term that I still haven't grasped, apparently I'm a fan of alt comedy, I'm a fan of all comedy, though, all stand-up.
I think those videos actually failed because I think one of them, especially the behind-the-scenes one, it tried to explain what alt comedy was. Because they were talking to the stage girl, and they were like, have you ever had a comedy show? And she's like, no, we usually do.
That's true.
And so they were trying to get into it, but I'm still like, I'm still left wondering, scratching my head, what is alternative comedy?
That's a good point, because alt comedy in this documentary was described as bringing up as many people as possible in a venue that normally you wouldn't perform comedy at. So they were running out like these small rock venues, and standing room only crowds of like 100, 150 people were standing for like 2.5 hours in the first one, the actual live at the Troubadour, and I couldn't believe it. But in 2006, when they filmed it, the movie was released in 2007, I believe, the actual Comedians of Comedy documentary was released in 2005, like a couple years before they released the tour. And if you're really into comedy, like we're talking about, in the traditional sense, then the stand-up comedy, it gives you really good insight as to, how people are carving out their own niche and making comedy something that's specific to them. When you see a certain person, you know, you're about to get this kind of laugh out of it, or this kind of experience. Go check those out. And then what were the other trailers that we had?
Falling Sky or whatever. Skyfall.
Skyfall, the new Bond. Which also brings me to the Hulu application. I watch Saturday Night Live, and Daniel Craig was on Saturday Night Live last week. I just watched that episode today, and it was actually really funny. He did a couple 007 spoofs that were pretty funny. They did, like, fake Bond girls, lesser-known Bond girls, I should say, and they made up, like, all these fake movie trailers. There was a fake Sean Connery one that was played by Taron Killam. He's really funny. What do you think about the new Bond? I mean, Daniel Craig's the man.
I like him. You know, I think they did well. It, to me, and this crossed my mind, maybe I'm wrong, maybe the trailer was misleading in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a reboot, because they introduced Bond to a whole new view, and the guy's young, and it's all, like,
unique,
and I'm like, huh, I wonder if they're trying to reboot the whole series.
Well,
they
already did reboot the whole series in the first one.
But why is there a new Q, and why did they...
Because the Q, the original Q died.
Did he?
Not in the... I think they killed him in the movie because he died in real life.
Yeah. But okay, well,
the old man.
It just seemed like they were trying to reinvent the series.
Yeah, you're right. There's a new Q.
He's
like 12 years old.
Yeah, he's like this kid out of high school. But, like, it was just, you know, it looked kind of cool. I mean, the Bond movies, they have to be over the top.
Yeah.
Like the Mission Impossible, the MI movies, are just that. They're impossible.
Yeah.
And they're way over the top.
Yeah.
They to me, Bond has this over the top feel to it. Even the older ones do. You know? But I don't know if they've maintained the same producers or screenwriters or whatever, but they seem to be just where I feel comfortable with the entertainment factor, the value of the film itself as far as going to see it. You know, you don't feel gypped or you're like disappointed, because sometimes with those movies I have to see, and let's go back to the Taken is something that can and does happen in real life.
Yeah.
Okay. Bond, to some degree, is the same, because it goes into the technologies, always did, with the cars and the technology, the espionage, and the technologies they used in this, and the spies and all that. Great, you know. Then you have you expect the yeah right moment in Mission Impossible. If whatever they pulled off wasn't impossible, then they just killed the title of it.
Right.
So, for me, I'm comfortable in that zone of 007 films. That scene, because it was great, and this is why I liked it. There was that scene in the trailer where some train's getting ripped apart, and he jumps in it right there, and then
he fixes it.
Like, yeah, that's Bond right there. Like, I like
it. Here's why I'm glad that you mentioned that, because from that I wanted to take something, because I want to know what you think about recently. Matt Damon has talked shit about the 007 franchise because he's been trying to promote the ongoing story of the Bourne legacy. He calls 007 pretty much a hack, and he calls him repulsive, that he's not a true, he glorifies, what do you say here? Here we go. So what does Jason Bourne really think of James Bond? And this is what Matt Damon had said. They could never make a James Bond movie like any of the Bourne film, charges Matt Damon in the Miami Herald, because Bond is an imperialist, misogynist sociopath who goes around bedding women and swilling martinis and killing people. So just to make sure you're reading him right, the Star adds of 007, he's repulsive. So that thing where the train's getting ripped in half and he lands, nobody would do that in real life. You don't fix your cufflinks and make sure your hair is perfect when you do that. Like, to me, that's just, I don't know.
Here's the deal.
It's abrasive.
Well,
it's annoying a little bit.
Well, that's because it's British.
I'm such a badass
that
I have to look good every time
British.
I don't know.
It's British. That's the difference, because Jason Bourne really is an American Bond.
Yes.
That's the whole point. And I...
We're number one.
Well,
it's
that's
better.
That's
I think
what
it's
Matt,
better.
That's what Matt Damon's saying.
Yeah.
He's like, our spies are better than theirs. You know, they're prima donna, you know, stuck up with the nose in the air, hoity-toity, and Americans, we don't glorify this. We do it because it's...
I love them either way, but I want to see a movie where they pit Jason Bourne and 007 against each other, like Alien vs. Predator, just go at it.
That'd be awesome, because there'd be two different worlds really
colliding. Yeah.
But the point of what I'm saying, you know. But see, to me, Bond movies are not Bourne movies.
Right.
Bourne movies is something plausible, something that actually can and does happen in the real world.
Yeah.
I'm not saying what Bond doesn't really happen in the real world.
But
where
not to that extent, yeah.
You know, but not
world
to,
domination
not,
every day.
Well, yeah, exactly. And not to the point where they like, romanticize it.
Right.
Where, a real spy doesn't have time to sleep with a whore.
Right.
He just doesn't. As much as he would like to,
right.
He's got to go kill a terrorist.
Right.
You know, Bond will always make time.
Right, he's betting somebody.
Right, he has a cask of wine with him.
And they're always like, names like Lick-a-Lot-o-Puss.
Yeah, exactly.
So stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
well,
right.
That's what I'm saying. It's
fair
British.
Enough.
It's British. It's, that's the difference between the Brits and the Americans.
That's funny, though. I love those British bastards.
I love it.
Yeah.
I think it's great. I do. But anyway, so that's the Bond one. And then we had Argo.
Oh, yes. Which is actually out now. Argo is a movie by, speaking of, wow, Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, here we go. When I talk about one, I always have to talk about the other. And this time, it's Ben Affleck killing it. I think he wrote and directed this movie based on a true story where something happens in a foreign country with some Americans held hostage. And in order to infiltrate this country, there are a group of people that volunteer to go over as a film crew, which I have heard about this happening a few times, actually. This is a trick that the American government tries time and time again. Sometimes it's successful, and sometimes it ends horribly with even more POWs, which is handing them over. But this is to that breadth, and I'm hearing Oscar buzz already. I love the fact that Ben Affleck is redeeming himself from all the bad movies that he was in, and he's actually picking out really good scripts, really good projects. I would say I want to do a show on Argo. I'm probably going to rate that really, really soon. But I think it's the trailer was done tastefully, and I was hooked from the second I heard like the soundtrack and like the era and the feel that this movie has. I don't know how big of a fan of Ben Affleck you are, but
I don't mind him. You know, people talk so much.
He did The Town.
About yeah. I mean, but one that always sticks out in my mind is Daredevil, and
bad movie that he was in.
Yeah, but
I liked
didn't
it.
Think it was that terrible.
I liked
to be
it.
Honest.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said though, I'm very light when it comes to movies. I'm not this huge critic. I go for fun. I try to get something out of it.
I had fun watching
it. I did too, and I thought it was cool how they visualized. He's a blind guy, and how they visualized him, tapping things and seeing. I liked that.
Yeah,
it was
good.
Cool. Whatever. So I don't dislike him. I don't think he's like the greatest either. I think it's too bad that he has to not really compete, but that, like you just said, when you look at Ben Affleck, then you have to look at Matt Damon, and it's like a piece of silver. And you put a piece of gold on that scale, the gold's going to drop, and the silver's just going to look like nothing, even though he...
I'm just glad that they can be perceived to be on at least the same level now.
I just think
respect-wise,
he's outshined by Matt Damon.
Oh, Matt Damon, yeah.
Come
Matt
on.
Damon, I mean, he's always going to play Robin to Matt Damon's Batman.
That's
always.
What, that's what I'm trying
always.
To say.
Always. Which brings up another point, sadly, between this podcast and last podcast, speaking of Daredevil, the actor that plays Kingpin in the Daredevil passed away. Name escapes me. John Coffey from Green Mile.
A couple weeks ago. Pretty sad. I didn't know.
He had a heart attack.
Yeah, I was traveling when that happened, and I was devastated when I found out.
I was reading
in the paper in USA Today, sipping my coffee. I was at the hotel, and I'm like, what?
I thought it was one of those things where it's a hoax and like a Twitter trend, the fake death, but no, it happened. And rest in peace for him. What was the fourth one that we saw?
So
we're gonna wrap it up
City.
Here pretty soon.
Russell Crowe, Marky Mark.
Yeah, and also Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yeah, Catherine Zeta.
That is interesting. Broken City. Actually, just go check that out, because I don't really even have anything to say about it.
It looked interesting enough.
Marky Mark doesn't ever really do any bad movies.
Yeah, he's a remarkable, coming from our generation, I would have never pictured him coming up to where
he is.
Amazing.
Huge
star. But he's super talented. Obviously, his little singing career with a boy band was just to be, like, everyone else just faded into the...
He wasn't even in a boy band. He started his own solo career. His brother was in New Kids on the
Block. But still, he was associated
sure.
with him all that time because he was always Marky Mark, and I know.
Right.
But still, like I said, to me, it's great to see the progression of someone's
right.
career like that he had, or he has, because thank God he's still alive or whatever. But, like, and I'm just... And I was...
On top of that, I hear he's a good dude.
Yeah,
so,
he is.
Like,
he's a really cool person.
Yeah.
You know, he's down to earth. You know, I like him because he doesn't... He's not... Whenever he does his little cameos in my one of my favorite HBO specials, you know, Entourage, he always just was himself. He wasn't acting. You know, it was great.
He executive produced.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've grown to like Mark Wahlberg. I'm a kind of a fan.
Speaking of which, wrapping it up here, Entourage is getting a movie. We're going to see that probably next year. That's pretty much it. I think I wanted to get into some video games and stuff like that, but I talked about that enough the last two podcasts. Anything else you want to add?
No. We actually went through a wide range of...
Yeah, I think that was pretty good.
Conversation.
Again, didn't plan anything. I hope the guy that messaged me on Facebook is listening, because the more I don't plan, the better the shows are. And every time I try to plan it, it falls to shit. So there you go. I guess that's it. Thanks for listening. Make sure you hit us up on iTunes. Just search A Week Late or iTunes and A Week Late Podcast on Google, and you should pull that up. Hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/A Week Late Podcast. Also go to the music blog at fenentertainment.com. I have been posting my friend Deuce Wild and MC Sal Boulder's mixes up. They have a home base radio show from Denver, Colorado every Thursday. Check that out on our Twitter feed or Facebook home base radio, I believe. If you missed the live show, we repost it before the next one goes up. So you'll always have a place to go for archiving the Deuce Wild mixes. That's at FenEntertainment.com, Facebook.com/FenEntertainment. It's at FenPromos on Twitter, at A Week Late on Twitter. Thanks to my brother David for yet another awesome movie and episode.
Cheers.
And my name is Darren, a.k.a. at Analysis49 on Twitter. And I will see you a week ago. Cheers.
This episode of A Week Late is brought to you by FenEntertainment.com, offering the very best in free independent music from the great sunny state of Florida and beyond. Download underground hip-hop, rock, industrial, drum and bass, dubstep, ska, drumstep, jungle, and much, much more. From single tracks to full sets, albums, and remixes, all for free. Plus the latest videos that get you up to speed on all the current tech, art, music, video games, TV, movies, pop culture, and even anime. No ads, no pop-ups, no flashy distraction banners, and it's absolutely free. Never a charge for anything. For all of this and for more information, go to www.fenentertainment.com.